This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Dean Reuter. He is General Counsel, Vice President, and Director of the Practice Groups of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy. He's a fellow at the National Security Institute at George Mason University's Antonin Scalia School of Law. He has served in two federal government agencies, including Deputy Inspector General, responsible for policing the use of federal funds granted and contracted through those agencies. As such, he helped conduct and oversee criminal investigations across the country. He's the author of three books, including Liberty's Nemesis, The Unchecked Expansion of the State, Confronting Terror, 9/11, and the Future of American National Security, and his latest book, The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil. Dean, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine. It's great to be on with you. Thanks for having me on, Jason.
It's good to have you. So we would be remiss if we didn't talk about current events, but I think, interestingly, they tie in pretty well with two of your books, Liberty's Nemesis and The Hidden Nazi, because not many people are talking about this yet, but I think we need to be thinking about it. There's a massive expansion of the state underway. You know, don't let a good crisis go to waste, right? So what are your thoughts on where we stand now and where we're going?
Well, you're exactly right. Two of those books do tie in. There's one which is basically a critique of the administrative state, the expansion of government or power in traditional normal times without any crisis involved. The Hidden Nazi is a book about World War II, focusing on one particular Nazi general, but I spend a lot of ink in that book talking about how the Nazi regime was established incrementally, as it turns out, bit by bit by bit. And I'm never anxious to compare any regime with what became the Nazi regime and the Holocaust, because you never want to diminish what happened during the Holocaust and what happened in World War II. By the same token, you need to be aware of what's happening and look for those subtle expansions of government power and make sure that as a crisis abates, those governmental powers contract.
Which they rarely do.
You rarely get a complete reset button. I agree with that, Jason. I mean, a lot of times you'll see, especially in times of war or some sort of national emergency, you will see a an expansion of government powers at the federal level, the state level, the local level, whatever it is or wherever it is. And then afterwards, you might get something of a reset, but you rarely go back to absolute starting point before the crisis.
Well, I'm not sure he said it this way, but he said something to the effect of nothing is so permanent as a temporary government program. Milton Friedman, right?
Sounds like also the words of Ronald Reagan. You know?
Well, yeah, he probably parroted Friedman. Friedman. So we are seeing this big expansion. One of them that concerns me quite greatly is the idea that, and China's already doing it, of course, but they don't care. The idea that government will be, of course, in partnership with the tyrannical tech companies, namely Google, the scariest company on earth, and Facebook being the second scariest company, just my opinion. But maybe Monsanto could be number three. Anyway, I digress. But, you know, the idea that they're going to track people with their smartphones, and they will know just the same way they know how much traffic there is on a road by how many people are congregating together. You know, they know if those phones are close to each other. And what are we going to see? Are we going to see the police coming to bust up a meeting soon? I mean, this is really quite scary.
It is, and it this before this crisis, before the coronavirus crisis, that is COVID-19, tech companies and governments were able to obtain unbelievable amounts of information on you and your family members based on your use of your computer and, of course, your use of your phone. The phone, of course, will track your location, not just where you are, but how high you are. I mean, what floor of a building you're in. So they can tell whether you're in front of Starbucks in the mall or on the third floor in front of Kohl's, so they can send you the right coupon. Mm-hmm. And that seems like, you know, under ideal circumstances, a great use of your information because you're being made aware of opportunities. But it can be put, as you've described, it can be put to terrible uses.
And there's already a move to get us closer to a digital cryptocurrency, one sponsored by the government and the central bank. You know, there, I've seen several articles referring to our currency and Chinese currency that, you know, it's dirty. It can spread the virus. And that's dangerous. I mean, everything always is in the interest of public safety. That's a good cover. You know, not always untrue, of course. You know, if we don't have spending privacy, that's another very big concern. I mean, if the government knows everything you buy and how you spend your money and they know where you're located, I mean, what's left?
Well, and you made some good points in there, in that comment. When we did the book Liberty's Nemesis, we were in touch with lots of people in focus groups, things like that. And that's on the administrative state, the expansion of governmental power through the fourth branch known as the administrative state, the alphabet agencies you think of, and the amount of control they wield. What's clear is that people in the public are very skeptical of government regulations and governmental power, but when it comes to health and safety, they have a different view of regulations. They're more accepting, almost in a knee-jerk sort of way. So anything that is packaged as in the interest of government health or government safety or national security doesn't quite get a free pass, but it gets less scrutiny right. from the public than it otherwise would. So in, to my mind, that is exactly the sorts of things you need to be scrutinizing, because that's where a government might take liberties, so to speak, civil liberties, literally.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, tell us about some of the parallels to what went on in World War II.
Well, so in my book, The Hidden Nazi, it's really a story about the hunt for one Nazi SS general who was despicable, helped make the Holocaust possible, then led all of Germany's secret weapons, ended up making a deal with the United States to save his own skin. But conventional history reports that he committed suicide at the end of the war, so nobody's written about him. That's what the book's about. But and it's a great read. I recommend it. You can get it online without having to go to a bookstore. But one thing I describe in there, and I studied, is how Hitler came to power and then how the Holocaust happened. How was it that such a highly cultured, highly advanced society, the German society, went so completely off the rails? And these are things you want to be looking for in today's world. It's the gradual accumulation of power, the gradual loss of liberty, starting first with one class of people, Jews. And it started, I wouldn't say benignly, but it was incremental. You know, first, Jewish people can't be in certain universities. They're not admitted to certain universities. And you think, well, that's terrible. But then you realize, well, now my son and my non-Jewish son can get into the university. He's got a better chance. So you see all this contraction of liberties for one group and an expansion of opportunities for another. Anytime somebody's going to make a profit or have an advantage over another because of a government policy, you've got those interest-seeking behaviors that just give rise to the accumulation of power.
Yeah, well, that's been a big point of discussion in the university system, which is ridiculous on its own right. But, you know, we could talk about that for hours, of course. But that may be changing. You know, there's definitely some good things going to come out of this crisis. That's my prediction. And one of them is going to be some loosening of this super high tuition cost problem and things like that, because I don't think you can justify charging people, you know, 30, 50 grand a year or even more to sit in front of a computer and take online classes to get a college degree. You know, I think that's going to shift the power. I think people are going to see, you know, to some degree that the emperor has no clothes there, but
I think that's right. I think that's right. I think there's going to be a total reevaluation. And, you know, it's interesting to me how many students are studying from home now who've paid room and board, who aren't being reimbursed.
And the universities aren't giving it back either. It's
right.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It really tells you what the motivations are there. But I agree.
Well,
they're running
a hedge fund. You can't blame them. They're just greedy capitalists like everybody else.
Yeah, well, it's a bit maddening because most of them manage to operate under a nonprofit banner.
I know, but they're really a hedge fund. They're a real estate hedge fund.
With some very highly paid, well-benefited employees, people who have great benefits.
It's ridiculous, yeah. Anyway, the tie-ins with World War II is what we were talking about. Sorry.
That's okay. One of the distinctions in World War II, of course, an absolute loss of liberty was the draft and the tremendous loss of life. I think, you know, we've passed now 10,000 deaths here in the United States. World War II, by the end of the war, cost the lives of well over 400,000 Americans. There's no way, I think, really to tell where the virus ends at this point. But it will be a real tragedy if we get to those World War II type numbers in terms of loss of life. And of course, worldwide, World War II cost about 60 million lives. So just staggering in terms of its impact and fought on every continent.
Yeah, it really is. So what were some of the deals with the devil, as the subtitle of your book says?
So, well, thanks for asking, Jason. Hans Kammler is the devil we're talking about. He's the guy who delivered the rocket team to the United States. We wanted the technology. Towards the end of the war, everyone knew Germany would lose the war. They had these highly advanced rockets that were going to be important and help the Americans win the Cold War against the Soviets. We wanted that rocket team. Hans Kammler, who helped make the Holocaust possible, was in charge of the rocket team and was in a position to deliver them to the United States. And we show in the book that he did exactly that in order to try and erase his past and save his own life. The problem with that theory is conventional history says he committed suicide at the end of the war. But as we show in later chapters of the book, he didn't actually commit suicide. He surrendered to the U.S. Army, and we've got all the documents to prove all of that. So it reads like a fiction thriller, but it's a nonfiction historical account of this man and the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of oppression during World War II, but it wasn't just what was going on in Europe, it was what was going on in the U.S. too. Of course, you mentioned the draft. Were there other things under, you know, like the sort of similar to the Patriot Act at post 9/11 that were instituted in the U.S.?
There were, and some of them were focused on particular people. You probably heard of the Korematsu case. That was the Supreme Court weighing in on the internment of Japanese
citizens. Yeah, of course, internment.
So we had that. There was rationing that was not voluntary. There was some voluntary rationing, but there were things you weren't allowed to buy, things you couldn't buy. Mm-hmm. There were enforced curfews, blackouts, and things like that. And a lot of, I think one of the parallels was just a lot of fear of the unknown. We can look back on history and know perfectly well what happened and consequently what didn't happen. But if you're living it live, we were patrolling our shores expecting an invasion, a ground invasion. Mm-hmm. We had U.S. submarines surrounding the United States looking for enemy vessels. And nobody knew whether that would happen or not, whether that would come to pass. But it was feared. And the fact that it didn't happen now makes it maybe seem in retrospect silly, but there was real apprehension and real anxiety. And of course, in Europe, you had bombs going off, 100, 300, 500 a week in London and Southampton and major European cities everywhere. Yeah. So those people lived in absolute terror.
No question about it. Well, what other things should we be concerned about based on current events? Give our listeners some tips as to what people in the U.S. and around the world need to watch out for, need to push back against when it comes to their governments.
Well, I would say it's in the United States in particular is to look out for aggressive use of power at the federal, state, and local level. People often focus on what's happening at the federal level. We're getting a little bit of a lesson here as President Trump says he's relying on the states to deal with the crisis. And you see a lot of edicts from governors and sometimes even more local officials describing what is acceptable and unacceptable, what is and sometimes criminal and non-criminal behavior now of citizens.
Well, yeah, but you know, I give Trump actually quite a bit of credit for the way he's done that. And, you know, of course, it is. Look at central planning is pretty efficient. I mean, ask the Chinese, right? You can just sort of do things, do them quickly and do them nationally. But, you know, he's seems like he's got a bit of a states' rights mentality there, which is more libertarian. I think that's good. Before you answer, though, just one more comment on that. The states can't, you know, they can't overdo what's constitutionally protected by the federal charter, except in times of emergency, of course, and that changes everything. But go ahead and comment on that now.
Well, I'm glad you said what you said, because I don't want to be misunderstood. I think he's doing exactly the right thing in recognizing the power of the states to deal with this and then standing by to assist them as the federal government. But I agree with you entirely. This is a problem that's handled best at this point at the state level, because what's happening in New York is different than what's happening in Wyoming, and what's happening in Connecticut is different than what's happening in New Mexico. So you need different sorts of responses based on your population density and local circumstances, and that's one of the beauties of the U.S. Constitution, is it puts power at the state level. You know, for the past 100 years or so, we've sacrificed power at the state level as it's gone to the federal level. So now you see it being pushed down to the state level, and what I agree with you is a proper manner.
Right. And so philosophically, I agree with that. But practice and philosophy often differ, if you ask me. And, you know, the problem is states don't have border control. The country, at least in theory, maybe not in the South, but in theory, does have border control. So when you have something like a pandemic, you can stop people at the borders and say, look, you can't come in without a quarantine, or can't come at all, right? If you're in a hotspot country, but you can cross state lines. So if I live in Florida, for example, if the governor of Florida says, you know, this and that, heck, I can still go to Georgia. It's right there. Or Alabama.
So. Well, no, that's exactly right. And I'm in Northern Virginia, just a stone's throw from Maryland and West Virginia and the district. So state lines are well within my reach.
Yeah.
But you're right. There are some very good benefits of federalism, that is power at the state level. And there are some drawbacks.
So what do we do about that? I mean, how do we reconcile it in the case, especially of a virus?
So what I think is most important in this circumstance is pretty much where you started out, Jason, and that's, you know, let the government act, be mindful of it, look for overreach, things that don't feel right to you, make your government justify what it's doing, and in the end, make sure the power resets to what it was beforehand. Mm-hmm. Make sure we don't have any lingering remnants of power at the federal government level or the state level.
Right.
This will be one of those unusual circumstances where a crisis will be abated and the government power might be enhanced. And I don't mean vis-a-vis the federal government. I mean state power vis-a-vis the people.
Yeah. And, you know, it's an interesting, at least thought experiment, if nothing else, to say, look, the First Amendment, arguably the most important amendment, guarantees the right to peaceably assemble. But we can't assemble right now. It's illegal. I mean, in some places, they've literally said, you can't have a meeting with more than two people. Imagine, unless it's like your children and
right.
A couple, then it could be maybe four. But wow, if you want to go protest something today, it's illegal, right?
That's
the
right.
Constitution has been overruled. And I don't really disagree with the government right now. I actually agree with them in many cases. But how long do you let that go? How long is it before we need to have a rally? We need to address our government. Someone needs to march on Washington, right? Some group of people, and you can't do it. It's literally illegal.
Well, and that is the key question, I think, at this point going forward. And it's important to remember, as you ask that question, it's about your liberty. It's about your civil liberties. It's about your freedom. But it's also about Americans' economic viability. This is not a cost-free exercise, the idea of shutting down major parts of the country.
Right. Let's address that one. I know economics is not your thing necessarily, but I certainly have some thoughts about it. I many times wonder if the response isn't bigger than the problem itself. You know, this seems like a pretty temporary problem. Flu season is always a temporary thing. This is obviously different in many ways than the regular flu, but it's still conceptually the same idea. And maybe the curve is flattened in a month. We've still got these lingering things, the spending, the bailouts, this will affect us for years, maybe decades to come.
Yeah, let me respond to that by dodging your question directly.
Okay. All right. Well, you can act like act like a politician. Dodge the question.
I'll say something I think is very close to our situation now, and it's I was in government at the time, and this is the run up to Y2K.
Mm-hmm.
For your youngest listeners, this is when the century turned over, and there was a lot of concern that computers would crash because they wouldn't recognize the 4-digit turnover of the year.
Right. They don't even know what Y2K is. Some people living today.
That's true. Yeah. It's true, but the point is, there was a great deal of concern, alarm even, that systems would fail. Airplanes would fall out of the sky.
Elevators,
power grids would collapse. Yeah. All our infrastructure would fail. And there was a long run-up to this,
mm-hmm.
and we spent billions and billions of dollars, I know this because I was in the government, doing remediation efforts where we hired thousands and thousands, millions of consultants to go back and change all these computer systems, tweak them, and at the critical moment, nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you know as well as I do that there's a rate of human error. If there were going to be problems and we tried to fix all of them, there's no way we fixed all of them. So if Y2K really was a problem, some of these remediation efforts would have failed,
mm-hmm.
and we would have seen some signs of that. We would have seen an airplane fall out of the sky. We would have seen a dam open or close improperly on Y2K. Some problem, some power grid fail. Nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to believe, which gets to your point of, is the cure worse than the problem? It clearly was in Y2K. But we can only say that with hindsight. That's the vexing things about these major decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much do you spend? How much do you react facing what is unknown?
See, the problem is, like I always say, you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. In post-Y2K, many of the non-believers said, see, nothing happened. This was total media sensationalism. It was overblown. It was an excuse for crony capitalism. It was an excuse to spend money. And others say, the reason it was a non-event is because we fixed it before it became an event. And
yes.
I guess nobody really knows the answer, right?
Well, my response to that is there's no way we could have fixed the problem so completely,
mm-hmm.
because that no problems manifested themselves on the day of.
Yeah,
so that's my response to that. But you're right. The dynamic is the same, whether it's coronavirus, Y2K, or global warming. It's like you see a problem, you see what you define as a problem. It's like, what is the appropriate level of response?
Right. Yeah.
And then after all the money's spent, the victors are always free to say it's only because we went to these extreme measures that we tackled this problem. And sometimes that's unknowable, unprovable.
I agree completely. Well, what else do you want to share with people as we wrap it up? Just maybe anything I haven't asked you about, whether it be your experience at the Inspector General's office or, you know, any of your books.
Well, I guess I'd go back to my most recent book, The Hidden Nazi. I do think it has larger lessons in it. This is diverting a little bit from what we've been discussing, but you mentioned younger generations who don't know about Y2K. You know, when I was growing up, everybody knew somebody who served in World War II or knew somebody who had family that died in the Holocaust. That's just not the case anymore.
Right.
The lessons about World War II and the Holocaust in particular are now just textbook exercises. And one of the reasons I wrote this book was to try and bring that story alive, including faces, including people, both victims and perpetrators, so that younger people would have some, what I felt like would be a more accessible information about how the evil that man can perpetrate against fellow man, but also the heroics that men can undertake in service of each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Give out your website.
It's Dean Reuter Books is where you can find me on Facebook, Dean Reuter Books. And my latest book is The Hidden Nazi. It's on there as well.
Yeah. And then also the Federalist Society at fedsoc.org. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
Fantastic. Well, Dean, thank you for joining us.
Jason, thank you for so much for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.